Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined by my new colleague at Sportsnet, Eric Engels, who covers the Montreal Canadiens for a while. Thanks so much, Eric, for taking the time and doing this. Pretty exciting year in Habs land, eh?
Yeah, for a while. Geez, it's my 17th year covering the Canadiens, 10th with Sportsnet. I'm happy you're on board with us. It's going to be good to have that kind of regular coverage in Ottawa, a fan base that definitely deserves the type of coverage you're going to provide. I see you're off to a great start already, so it's exciting. And this division is going to be a lot of fun to cover in general. There's a lot of good competition.
For sure, for sure. It will be just a barn burner of a division. I think it's by far the best one in the league, and it'll be interesting to see how the Habs and Sens kind of square off. I think Twitter will be ablaze a couple times this season. But
I'm gonna put you on the spot right away. Who's finishing higher in the standings between those two teams? Don't be on the
honestly.
fence. Don't be on the fence, Alex.
You know what? My gut is I'd honestly right now go with the Habs. I actually really,
Really?
I it's the goaltending for me. That for me is the distinguishing factor.
And you think Montembeault and Primo are gonna be better than Allmark
I just Allmark's
Now I'm
nicked up
blanking.
Forsberg.
Yeah,
Allmark's already banged up a little bit, and we'll see. I just want to see it. I just want to see it. And the Habs have had pretty good goaltending the past couple of years, even though their team hasn't been nearly up to snuff. But you would know much better than me. But I don't know.
well, it's funny that you mentioned the goaltending as the reason because I look at the Canadians' goaltending and think it's probably, I don't want to label it the biggest concern, but my view is that those guys need to be at least on par with where they were a year ago, which is a tall task anyways, because the Canadiens leaked chances at a rate that was higher than pretty much any other team in the league, and they did a great job covering up. But now Jake Allen is in New Jersey. He was kind of the insulation for both guys. I thought after he left, Sam Montembeault's game as the established starter of the Canadiens went down a little bit. So did the teams in front of him with respect to Montembeault. But this is a big year for him in terms of the Team Canada conversation and the kind of the open bid for a job that exists at his position. Caden Primo, I really think, is ready to take the next step. He showed a lot of good things last year. But I look at the Canadians and say they're going to be better in almost every department. The one place where they can't afford to be worse is in nets. And I'm not putting it past those two guys to be just as good as they were. But if they take even a slight step backwards, that's big trouble for the Canadians.
Maybe with that, talking about how this team, you expect them to make a ju big jump, and obviously they've acquired some talent, some guys that are a young team like the Senators, with the young core that's growing into its form. I guess with that, like, what's maybe, maybe the biggest point of emphasis you think that for this team to kind of take that next step? Like, what players, what kind of needs to go right for this team to maybe not make the playoffs, but definitely be closer to the playoff race?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of things need to go right? You could go down the list, starting with the goaltending that I just mentioned. Will the young defense, the guys who have been here for 2, 3 years, Gooley, Jacki, Barron, Struble, those types of players be able to take their game to the next level based on the experience they've accrued? I think Lane Hutson is coming in with a lot of hype around him, and I think it's really justified. I believe he's going to start off in this league as a star. I really believe that.
Really?
And it's not based on just the skill that he exhibits. It's really based on the way he couples that with his energy and his enthusiasm for the game, his passion to play, and his desire to make the difference on virtually every shift. And I just think he's got it all in really strong balance. And I think he starts off as a star. He's gonna have nights where, look, it's going rough for him in his own zone, or he's on the wrong side of a highlight reel play because he took too much of a risk. He's going to get hit a couple times real hard. And the one thing he's shown, I think, as always being an undersized player at every level, is he'll bounce back up and keep going. I think he starts as a star. I think he's going to be in that race for the Calder Trophy. I think he will be a superstar within a couple years. That is his trajectory to me. So we'll see how the defense shakes out and how that all gets balanced out with veterans like Mike Matheson and David Savard, who bring, a good amount of experience and also some stability back there. The forward group is way deeper this year. You look at the top six, which everybody's kind of emphasizing, because you've got Kirby Dach coming back healthy. You've got Patrick Laine in the mix. Alex Nowak took his steps to look like a legitimate middle six forward who can play in that top six role. They have other candidates who could fill in if for whatever reason they need to move him around their lineup. But what I like about their forward group is that in having another line to support the Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský trio, you're creating insulation for a bottom six that is a lot deeper than what you see featured throughout the rest of the division. And are the Canadians paying too much there? Yes. Can they afford to pay too much right now with the way their salary is structured? Yes. So when you look at guys like Brendan Gallagher and Josh Anderson, who a lot of people around the hockey world will say are not the same players that they used to be, I think they're going to be very dangerous players with an insulation of the top six that's been created here. So those are all the things that, okay, Kirby's got to bounce back well. Laine's got to bounce back well. The first line has to repeat its success. The defense has to be able to take that next step, and the goaltending has to stand up. It's a lot of things that have to go right for the Canadians to be there. I'm going to give you the main reason why I agree with you that I think the Canadians are going to end up above the Senators in standings.
Okay, go for it.
Culture. And what the Canadians have built over the last couple of years, despite losing as many games as they have, is an extremely healthy, strong culture where habits have been formed at ages that are critical to form them at, so that by the time this team gets to where it's supposed to go and potentially become a contender, that's baked in already. And that culture that Marty St. Louis has instituted, that the players have carried forward, that their leadership group with a guy like Suzuki at the helm of it, who's really a strong leader both on and off the ice, have reinforced. It is the place where you may look at the Canadians and size them up against Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit, everybody else trying to get themselves into the mix and knock some of the teams we assume will be in the playoffs out. And you may look at them on paper and say, well, they're not really better than those teams, but I think they're way ahead in this department. In the culture department. And that to me is the biggest concern I have about the Senators. When I look at them, they have major steps to take from a culture perspective to enable the talent and the cream to rise to the top. So we'll see where it goes. And it could be eating my words in a few months from now, which is always the fun part of making predictions, and we make them in our business. But I really think, I really think that the Canadians are taking a big step forward this year. And it's really not just the players and the depth and all that stuff we were just talking about. It is how far their culture has come along within the short time frame that Jeff Gordon, Kent Hughes, and Marty St. Louis have been at the helm of this thing.
I guess with that, you talk about culture and obviously in Ottawa, it's we have a new GM, new coach, everything. But in Montreal, as you mentioned, it's been Jeff Gordon, and obviously Marty St. Louis. Being around the team consistently, what have you seen from St. Louis maybe into trying to implement that culture? Like, what have you seen just being around the team the past couple of years?
Well, a lot. First of all, it's interesting the way you kind of went into that question, because the one thing you didn't mention was the new owner in Ottawa.
Yes.
And it all starts at the top, right? So Jeff Molson made a decision a couple of years ago in firing Marc Bergevin and moving on and setting the Canadians on the path of an official rebuild, which, you can give him credit or not for that specific decision. I think it was kind of a natural decision to make with where they were at and the players who can no longer continue playing, like Byron and Price and Weber. And they had to make a transition here, and they had to do it the right way instead of continuously trying to be competitive, but never enough that they could win the cup. So give Jeff credit for making that call. I think the best call he's made in his best form of leadership was deciding that the job of GM and running hockey operations needs to be split in two. And I'm bringing all this up before we get to Marty and what you asked me about Marty, because Michael Andlauer was a part owner of the Montreal Canadiens.
He
And
was.
Michael Gerlauer believes very much in the model that Jeff Molson instituted there. And he's drawn a lot of inspiration from the way the Canadiens have operated and expanding their bureaucracy and bringing in different people in different departments, from player development to scouting to analytics. And then the real key being harmonizing all of it, having everybody work together instead of in their separate silos. Of course, everybody has their own group and they do their own thing, but now there's a lot more harmony from the Canadiens organization. So when you ask me about Marty, it's not just about Marty. It's about everything that's gone on around Marty to enable him to get the very best out of his staff, his players. But he has an aura about him. I think it's really apparent to anybody, even outside of Montreal, who watches a clip come in, and we're lucky and we're in that age of technology where all that stuff is floating around social media and it's readily accessible. But I think that the NHL fans in general have a real open window into what Marty St. Louis is like, because he's genuine. And he's very fortunate to be coming from a place where, having not coached at this level before getting in here and not coached at a level even close to this, he was able to grab the attention of all his players immediately by saying, "I've been the healthy scratch. I've been the guy who went unsigned, undrafted. I've been the guy who had to go to the minors. I've been the guy who made it to the NHL, then had to go back to the minors. I've been the fourth liner, the third liner, the second liner, the first liner, the all-star, the superstar, the Hall of Famer, the Stanley Cup winner. I've been in all your shoes." Like, that is attention grabbing on day one. The other element with Marty is he's a philosopher. I call him hockey's Aristotle, and he just has a way of expressing himself that makes him very easy to connect with. And when you combine all those factors and just how genuine and authentic he is, it's easy to see how the players feel like they know where they stand with him, like there's an honest channel of communication, and that there's instant respect that he came in commanding just because of his profile, but that he's also earned with them in the way he's conducted himself. And he is the driving force of the culture that I was talking about that has become so healthy. But there's a lot, it's not just Marty. You know, the players have to play ball too. They have to participate in that. They have to accept that. They have to drive that just as much. And everything going on within the organization, that harmony that I was talking about, so essential to running properly, it takes time to build. And that's why I say, you know, the Canadians, I think they're way ahead on culture. I think Ottawa, with Michael Gerlauer coming in, with hiring Steve Staios and bringing in Travis Green, and they're maybe advanced in terms of where they've developed their talent to and the type of talent they have around the system that's more established. But now they have to catch up on all these other things that make for a winning hockey team, and not just one that has its successes but ultimately doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you make the parallel between the Senators and the Canadiens, because even just being around the rink this season compared to last year, there's so many more people around the rink. You see, there's more video staff, coaches, trainers, everything. And so hopefully that translates onto the ice for the Senators. But at the same time, you can tell the investment that Anlauer has kind of put in, and a la Jeff Molson, to kind of put, as he always says, the best in class, and having the best people in the positions, to kind of make the team on the ice better. We'll see if it works,
I
but
think Toronto kind of set a standard, you know, a number of years back when they realized, or at least employed, the idea that there's no salary cap off the ice,
no.
right? You can build out the structure around the hockey team to ensure that you're giving yourself the best chance of success. You can put the resources in place. Then you have to encourage your players to use them. The Canadians have, you know, it's there. It's that culture is established. It's embedded. It's the fiber that they are weaving together, and it's already there. Ottawa, Buffalo, can't speak as much about Detroit because I don't want to make guesses as to where they've come to in that process, because they clearly made some good advances last year, and I really love their coach. But I think Ottawa and Buffalo have a lot of work to do to get to that place to make what they've done in terms of drafting and developing and grabbing talent work for them. Otherwise, it's never going to work. So, like, I don't, like, you have to do this part. You can't skip these steps.
And it's interesting just in Ottawa, like how much Travis Green has kind of gone back to the fundamentals and really just emphasizing defense structure. And those were words that were not used as readily with DJ Smith. And I'm not trying to, hate on DJ Smith, but it was a different kind of temperament and message to the players. It was more about development, and now it's much more about winning hockey. And you can see it even at practice. There's m much more veterans. Like last season, the Senators essentially their oldest player was Claude Giroux, and no one was really close to him on the team in terms of being in their kind of mid-30s. And now you bring in Amadio, Cousins, Gregor's a bit older, like I'm obviously Allmark, Jensen. So they have much more of a foundation of that, those kind of veterans, and the players keep talking about it as well. But I guess maybe to transition back to the Habs, because that's what I want to talk to you about. My kind of question is, you talk about culture that they've put in place in Montreal, but at the same time, if you look at Toronto, they had everything needed, but the culture kind of, well, maybe they'll win a cup in the next couple of years, but it seems as though they're not on that trajectory. And I wonder for you, the past 2, 3 years, this team really hasn't had any pressure, and it feels as though now there will be some sort of modicum of pressure. How do you think the players like Suzuki, Slavkovsky, and just the young core will adjust to that pressure on the ice?
I think they're ready for it, and I think they've been working towards it. And a lot of people will say there isn't pressure on them, and there hasn't been pressure on them, but there's always pressure on them in a market like this. The real answer, though, is how do you deal with that best is to come together as a team. And one of the reasons why I think there's been a struggle with that in Toronto versus I don't think there will be as much of one in Montreal is the hierarchical structure of the actual team itself. Suzuki was the standard bearer from a salary perspective. Now Patrick Laine was traded for and is making the most money of anybody on the team. But they were able to convince Slavkovsky and Caulfield in an environment where the cap was going up and their values would certainly go up over 8-year deals to take less than Suzuki was making on a deal that he signed 2 years prior. Doc and Newhook are on sweetheart deals for where they're at in their development for at least 2 more years. Caden Gooley, another example. You have already the natural kind of mechanism in place for this to feel like more of a team versus having certain tiers and cliques within a team itself. And I'm not sitting here saying the Leafs are not a team and they're not, but it has, I think, been an issue in terms of how the pressure has been dispersed among their players, right? Most of it is on their core four. Whereas in Montreal, of course, is there more pressure on Nick Suzuki as the captain of the Canadiens? Understandably, but there's enough burden to go around. There's enough of it to share that they can do that together. And I don't have much concern about them dealing with that because they set, like any other team, very high expectations for themselves, no matter what people think of them on paper. I have my own theory on the league in general, which is that, like, I think there's four or five teams that are really at the top. They're a top tier, and that you just look at them and say they're guaranteed. The next tier over is about 18 teams for me that you may look at them on paper, or the average hockey fan may look at them on paper and say, well, this team's better than that team, and this team's better than that team. There's very marginal difference between those 18 teams, and it comes down to who stays healthy, who gets off to a good start, and whose goaltending holds up.
Exactly.
Right? People
Like,
may look at a team like Tampa and think they're markedly better than Ottawa and Montreal, and given the star power that's there, it's a well-supported argument. But there isn't such a huge difference that if one of the other two teams, like Ottawa or Montreal, gets off to a good start and Tampa has a mediocre one, it's going to be a fight between those teams all the way through the end. So I don't see much separation. And so pressure in general is dispersed throughout the division. I don't think it's different in Montreal than it is in Toronto or Boston or Tampa or Ottawa or Buffalo or Detroit. When you look at those markets, those teams have to take massive steps to appease their fan bases and their own management and ownership. So we'll see where it all goes, but I think the Canadian can handle it.
It's interesting you talk about kind of culture, and that's in Ottawa. They've been talking about the culture of winning, and I look to Boston, right, where they've you look preseason, you don't think, oh, this team is going to be a world beater, and then they have the points record, or even last year, you're like, oh, they're going to take a step back, and they did, but they were still clearly a playoff team. But on paper, you wouldn't say that they're leaps and bounds better than the Habs or Sens or Detroit, Buffalo, right? But it's I think some of that, I wonder what you think, just maybe as an ethos, is how much of winning is a habit rather than maybe even just in the NHL compared to maybe just purely on skill. Obviously they mirror each other, but I'm just curious what your thoughts
It
are on that.
is, and it is baked into players at young ages by the people who were there before them. And so that's exactly what I was talking about in terms of why the Canadiens' culture, I feel, is ahead than some of the teams they're competing against that are trying to climb their way up the standings. Is this process was undertaken while the bulk of their core was 20, 21, 22. If you start to do it when the players are 25, 26, 27, it's very hard. It's just as hard to build habits as it is to undo them and rebuild them. Like, it's tricky. I look at Boston, you have a lot of the young core that was emerging that was going to have to replace guys like Krejci and Bergeron, who got to be around those guys and are still around Marchand, Pasternak, who learned from those guys. And it's a big factor. The biggest factor in their success last year was goaltending, right?
It was.
It comes back to what we were just talking about, that if you looked at them on paper 2 years ago when they were world beaters and set records, they got off to an incredible start. You get off to a really good start, it goes a long way. And I know that people who are listening to your podcast are fans of the Senators. And I know they're probably pretty sick and tired of seeing the team shoot itself in the foot in October and then try to play catch up the whole season. So, the start, you can't make the playoffs in the first month of the season, but man, can you miss them? Like, it is critical and it makes the difference between what you think is a better team on paper than another team and what is actually the case when it all gets said and done. So, I think, but you're right. You're onto something about winning is a habit, and it's embedded, kind of from the top down from older players who push and carry who push this onto a younger generation that can carry it forward. I think in the Canadians' case, there's a lot of the guys who are at the foundation of their team. Think about Caulfield and Suzuki specifically, who are around guys like Weber and Price. And that goes a long way. And if I think about Detroit, who took a pretty significant step last season, despite just missing the playoffs, and people will look at guys like Petrie and Sherratt and think, okay, they're not really, what. But those guys are a big factor in driving that team to the next level because they know and they've been there and they know what it takes. And so you can't underestimate that. It has been Ottawa's biggest failing. As they've raised all this young talent, and no question that Michael Andlauer and Steve Staios recognized this and wanted to address it, and it was partially addressed by Pierre Dorion before bringing a guy like Claude Giroux. But to have a guy like Thomas Chabot for the first few years of his career playing 27, 31 minutes a night without any insulation around him, it has changed his trajectory as a player. He's still, to me, one of the 64 best defensemen in the league. But I saw Thomas Chabot when he was drafted thinking, this guy's going to be a top five defenseman in the league. And if he had had that insulation at an early age and those guys to learn from, it advances not only his progression, but the culture that we're talking about.
Is that maybe something with, I read your piece a couple days ago about kind of the steps Slafkovsky has taken, and is that almost like the reverse of the Chabot effect, where he has been insulated and now he's ready to take that next level?
He's been insulated, but he's also been exposed to things that they felt that he could handle. And they did a really good job of maintaining his confidence. There's only so much that you can do for anybody to maintain their confidence, right? And you don't just look at somebody and say, be confident. That's not how confidence works. You need to do the things, commit the actions that enable a confidence to develop within yourself. The thing about Slafkovsky is that he was very confident in himself to start with. And what they did a great job with him of doing was making sure that he understands that his performance will not be measured on how many goals he scores, how many points he puts up, but rather the steps that he takes to understand how to get there in this league, to get to the level that he needed to get to. Now, what separates him from a lot of other players who are chosen 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is the ability to progress quickly. And I think a lot of number one picks share this, that they're, and I'm not saying that they go from A to Q and all of a sudden the points are there immediately within a year or two. It's more that what they work on, they move through quickly to get to the next step and the next step and the next step. And Slafkovsky has that. And he's got a guy like Marty St. Louis and a guy like Adam Nicholas, who's a head of player development, that really kept him very close to them so that they could preserve his confidence and have it bust through. But Slafkovsky deserves most of the credit because he's the guy who submitted to the process. He's the guy who was able to say, you know what, these guys are right, and I'm going to do what they say to round out my game and find a way through this league. And I can't believe what this kid has done in 2 years and what he looked like to start with, because his biggest weakness coming into Montreal was his ability to get to the right places at the right time, his play without the puck. And I would tell you right now that it's his biggest strength. It has gone from his biggest weakness to his biggest strength. And when you couple that with his size, his skill level, he's going to be really good this year. He was really good for the back half of last year. And in a couple of years from now, he's going to be an absolute force to be reckoned with. Like they've handled him really well. And a big part of that was turning off the noise around him and ignoring it themselves and supporting him through his process to ensure that he understands what they're trying to do with him. Very open communication. So good.
I guess with that, it's so fascinating. Like, I have a bunch of Habs friends in my life, and I always pick their brain to kind of get a bit of a pulse of the fan base. And if it feels like a year ago, even at this time, Habs fans are like, oh, Slafkovsky, Caulfield, like, we're excited, but it didn't feel as though, within 3, 4 years we could be a cup contender. And it feels like this season, with Line A Demidov as well being drafted, Hudson's arrival, that this team isn't on the precipice, but you can almost see the pathway to becoming a real contender. Like, for you, is that something that you felt was the case a year or two ago, or that it's kind of slowly building and now it's kind of rising to the surface?
It's kind of the advantage of being behind the scenes, and I don't pretend to know so much more than anybody else who informs themselves about what's going on with the Canadians and loves them so much. I don't, I have the advantage of being objective and not being a fan of the team and being a reporter and being behind the scenes and talking to these people and seeing how they're building things. Two of the pieces that I did over the last couple of years were about Jeff Gordon and how he was brought in to not only rebuild the hockey team that everybody assumed that was his, going to be his job, but to rebuild the organization. There was a lot of things that the Canadians were doing that was enabling them to kind of coast on their reputation of being the quote unquote New York Yankees of hockey. And in coasting on that reputation, they had really fallen behind and were operating more like the Buffalo Bills of hockey. He had a big job, a big mandate to do the things that I'm talking about that have become healthy over the last couple of years. Expand the different departments, bring them together under one roof, have everybody communicating in a proper way, everybody pushing the same direction. The piece that I initially wrote was called how Jeff Gordon will modernize the Montreal Canadiens. And then it was a year later looking at all the things he had done in that vein. And I'll be following up on it this year too, at some point or another. These were big pieces that required speaking to a lot of different people. But being able to be a fly on the wall for this process and seeing it all from behind the scenes, I can tell you that they're giving themselves every opportunity to become the team they want to be. I don't know if it's going to be next year. I don't know if it's going to be the year after. I don't know if it starts this year. But I could see the Canadians going from they want to be in the mix, they want to be competitive, to all of a sudden Demidov is here, the players are all a year older, and they rapidly turn the corner into becoming kind of a perennial contender. That's their plan. They're going to have really interesting decisions to make as that plan unravels. Like, are they, and a lot of it is going to be determined by what happens this year. Because if they're able to take the step that they believe they're capable of this year, it incentivizes management to build more around the current core than they would the future core, right? You've got a separation here. You've got Suzuki, Doc, Newhook, Caulfield, Gooley to an extent in one category. But then you have Slafkovsky, Hudson, Reinbacher, Demidov. You have two kind of windows here, and the question is, which one do they go all in on, or do they go all in on either one, or will they be spreading themselves too thin by trying to maximize the whole thing? They're going to have tough decisions to make. Like, if you want an example of a tough decision they're going to have to make, it'll be a year from now. What will they do with Mike Matheson? You know, if they want to give the current core and the Suzukis of the world the best opportunity to start contending and potentially win within 2, 3 years, or whatever it is, that's going to be a really hard decision as to whether or not they sign him or they trade him or they, you know, we're talking about a 60-point defenseman, which I don't know if you noticed, there's not a lot of them in the league. So, and he's not a perfect player, but he's a really good player. And his best has come here in Montreal. And they're going to have to try and convince him to take less than what he's going to be worth on the market. That there's no question about because of what they have coming up the ranks. So it's just an example of they've done really good work up until now, and their hardest decisions are coming up.
I guess with that, one of the hardest decisions you could argue that they made was picking Reinbacher potentially over Michkov. What have you seen from him so far in camp, and what do you think maybe the expectation should be for him heading into essentially his first season with Montreal?
Yeah, the expectation for David Reinbacher is that he continues to take steps towards playing in the NHL. And then I believe, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to play some games here this year. I don't think he's going to start here out of the gate, but there's still a couple of weeks left in camp for him to make a case for that. The thing about, and the thing that kind of handcuffs him from making the best case for it, is that what makes David Reinbacher a really good player is the stuff that you expect to see from a 24, 25-year-old defenseman that is so reliable and stable and positioned well and good stick and great passing and nothing flashy, nothing off the charts. But if he continues to develop what he already has within his makeup, he's going to be a, you know, a top pairing defenseman. There's like very little doubt about that from scouts I speak to. I'm not talking about Canadian scouts. Scouts are that have watched him play, that amateur scouts that wanted their teams to pick him. There are elements of his thing that of his game that you just don't get out of a defenseman that's 19 years old. It takes a lot of time to develop those things, and for him to already be starting with that, gives him a canvas that's kind of already half full. Like, he can just continue to paint. It's going to take time for him to find the confidence to execute that game at this level on a consistent basis, as it takes time for every young defenseman. But a lot of guys come up at his age that get a chance to play in the NHL, and you're trying to teach them how to play defense. He's got offensive potential, much more so than he's given credit for, and he makes a lot of offense generating plays, much like a Caden Gooley does, that he probably doesn't get enough credit for. The stability factor is it's there. The scouts love him. Guys that don't work for the Canadians, they really love him. They will go on the record and talk about it with their name, but they love the type of player he can be. And if he can avoid falling into the trap of trying to make himself stand out, because he really doesn't have to do that. He just has to be exactly who he is. And I think he knows it. I think he learned that last year after a tough year in an environment where they lost a lot and he was just kind of all over the place. And he had to deal with that fallout from the draft of some fans, and I don't think it was the majority of them, but really making them feel as though he was second fiddle for them. And I can tell you right now, the Canadians weren't considering anyone other than Reinbacher as their pick at fifth. And there was a lot of teams that wanted him too, and a few of them that tried to trade up to get him specifically. So I think he'll be okay. I think he's gonna be a really good player.
With that, just going to the Habs defense this season, like you feel like they're improved, and in my opinion as well, that they are, but it still feels like they're just a bit, maybe a player or two short on the back end. Like, how do you, what's your outlook on kind of the expectations for the decor this season?
I don't know. I'm not sure what to expect. I have expectations for the individuals. I have to see how it comes together. I think Gooley and Matheson make for a strong pair, even if I'd like to see Gooley, who's a left-handed defenseman, play on the left side. I think that would best serve his development. He's very, very good on the right side, and he's a good complement to a player like Matheson. And the two of them are the best skaters back there, and they just are able to handle the workload and the minutes that are required to play against the best players in the world night in, night out. So I have very high expectations for Caden Gooley, but also for Mike Matheson, who's really taken off with the Canadians. People are going to have to accept that he has to take a certain level of risk for his talent to shine through the way it has, that he's going to be on the wrong side of some decisions that end up on highlight reels level mistakes, just like Lane Hutson. I think Lane Hutson with David Savard is going to be a really good complementary second pairing. There's going to be some growing pains for Hutson, but he couldn't be have a better guy to lean on than David Savard in that, who's a warrior, a guy willing to step in front of pucks with his face if he has to, and he's just all around steady and very unheralded offensively. He's got offensive ability that he doesn't get credit for, that he's got it. It's very strong. And then the third pair is kind of a mix and match. And I'm wondering what it's going to look like. I think it could be Arber Xhekaj and Logan Mailloux, but I think Justin Barron is going to rotate into that pairing quite a bit. I don't expect they're going to lose him. Jaden Struble is a guy that nobody's talking about, but he's proven already that he can play at this level, and he may have to wait his turn because he's waiver eligible and there is a numbers game where he can pass through without having to go through waivers, I should say. They have more depth at this position than they're probably giving credit for. The real question is, can the young guys who have been here already take the step they need to take to stabilize their blue line? Because we all know, wherever they finished in goals for last year, I think they're going to be able to improve on that significantly. Where they finished on goals against is going to be the challenge. And so goaltending has to hold up, but the defense really has to do the job in front of them.
The one storyline, and you wrote about him last night, was Patrick Laine. Just what's he been like to cover so far? And he's always a good quote here and there as well. What have you seen from him so far at training camp?
Oh, he's been pretty sheltered. I mean, we spoke to him basically for the first time since the golf tournament after last night's game. And I think he's got a lot of acclimatizing to do within the group, the team. He's got everything's new for him, right? Like new environment, new coach, new teammates, new system. And you put all that together with the fact that he hasn't been on the ice more than three times before coming to Montreal a few weeks ago and starting to skate in the informal skates with the guys. This training camp is pretty important for him to get up to speed so that when the season starts, he's not behind, because right now, physically, he is behind. And he's not making a secret of that. And the Canadians aren't making a secret of that. And it's visible on the ice. What I like in his case is he seemed to really crave and want to be in a hockey market like this. And you look at his first game, and we saw him lift his level significantly from what we've seen in the scrimmages and practices and everything like that with the crowd behind him. And if that was a dose of what the Canadians are going to get with Patrick Laine this year, he's going to have a very good chance of having a good bounce back season. But it's up to him. And I think, and I'll write about this at some point soon, Marty St. Louis likes to say there are guys who play hockey and there are hockey players. And I think Patrick Laine's mission this year should be to prove that he's a hockey player, because we all know he could play hockey. I don't have any. I really don't have any concerns or questions as to whether or not he'll be productive. He's going to be productive. He's going to be playing with Kirby Dach or Nick Suzuki on a nightly basis, depending how they mix and match their lines at times. He's going to be on the power play regularly. He's going to get his touches and he's going to score because he's got elite touches. He has that ability. But what he's shown throughout his career so far is that he's a player. He plays hockey. Can he prove to be a hockey player? Will he prove to the Canadians that, yeah, they wanted somebody who could help them score more goals? Do they see him as a guy that can help them win? I think he needs to prove that to them. And he needs to prove it to himself too. And I think if he can do it, that's the best story that he could possibly author here. And I'm all for those types of stories. I'm all for guys who a lot of people doubt proving themselves right and other people wrong. Those are the most fun stories to write and cover, and it's why we all love Rocky and whatever else. So I don't cheer for teams. I don't, I do cheer for players. I like to see players turn the narrative on its ear. And he has a great opportunity to do that. And it's up to him. I hope he does it for himself. If he doesn't, I think he'll be very productive. And a player that isn't here for much longer than his contract is for 2 years. We'll see.
Another player that, is someone that you'd be cheering for is Kirby Dach, who, looked really good this time last year in training camp. Obviously had a really unfortunate injury. Was it the first game or the second game of the season? But
Second, yeah.
second game. What's he look like? Does it feel like he's kind of fully recovered? And what's kind of his mood been at camp after a season-long injury?
He's definitely fully recovered. He says he feels physically well, mentally, I'm sure, well too. He doesn't seem to be under any illusions that it's going to be a process for him to get back to the same page he left off on and then build from there. He seems very down to earth about that process. It requires patience. I think there's a lot of things that show that he's still the same player, but he needs to find that confidence on the ice the way it's always kind of been there for him, or at least up to the level that he had built for himself before he went down. And that's not an easy thing to do when you tear your ACL and MCL in your knee and you're sitting out for 8 months. But I will say this about Kirby Dach. There cannot be a single player who's more motivated than he is in this room right now. And I have a strong sense that he'll find it. And I think he'll have a very good year. I have high expectations for Kirby Dach because I believe he's a really good player. But it might take him a year before he takes an exponential leap versus just being as good as he was. And that would be normal coming off the injury that he had, which typically would take a year to get your stride back to where it wanted to be. Now he's a lot younger than a player I was about to mention. But if you look at Connor Brown
Yeah.
for his ACL, and last year spent the entire season with Edmonton fans begging Ken Holland to trade him.
And then
And then the playoffs started and he was like a house on fire. That's sometimes how long it takes from a physical perspective to get to where you want to go. Now, Kirby has the advantage of being a lot younger. You know, Kirby is 23 years old, if I'm not mistaken, or if he's even turned 23 yet. I'd have to look it up on my phone, which I don't feel like doing right now. But that is an advantage. And man, the potential of the player is huge. To me, he's a player that could be. He has the potential to be as good as Nick Suzuki. And I think a lot of people will look at the Canadians and say, well, do they have a true number one center? Do they have an Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, or this or that? No, they don't. But if you have two Nick Suzukis, I think you're better off than some of those teams that only have one of those guys. And Nick Suzuki is absolutely unequivocally a number one center in this league. Like, he's one of the best ones, both ways and in terms of where his game is going. So you have two of those guys, you're cooking. I just wonder if it'll take a year for Kirby to get to that level when he looked like he was already ready to get there last year. We'll see. We'll see what he can prove.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for doing this. I guess, you know, through our conversation, I picked the Habs to do a bit better than the Sens, and I feel like Sens fans are gonna kill me for it. But over this conversation, you've really kind of sold me on it. Not that that's your job or anything. I guess for you, what do you think a good season or in Montreal would be? Is it to make the playoffs? Like, should that be the expectations? Is it to be maybe where Detroit was last year on right on the cuff of making a playoff? So I wanted to kind of pick your brain on that.
It's a good question, and I want to think about it for a second, but this is how I would frame it. A successful season for them would be the minimum bar of that would be that they end up in a spot like where Detroit or Philadelphia was last year and feel really disappointed that that was the outcome. Because I think those guys, to a man, believe they can make the playoffs this year. And I think management and even ownership and even the coaching staff, who have tempered expectations with the we'll be in the mix and we want to be in the mix and we believe we have what it takes to be in the mix. I don't think they've just tempered expectations. I think that's realistic. And I think they're taking a realistic view and doesn't really matter what they say because ultimately it gets decided on the ice. But I think they believe that they can do it. And I think they should be disappointed if they don't. And that's how you grow towards being successful. It's not good enough to tap yourself on the back and say, you know what, we made a real good run of it. And, you know, we did more than what people thought of us. If that's the attitude, you
I've
don't
heard
get
that
those. Yeah, you don't get those.
I've heard that a lot in Ottawa, so, and it did not work, so.
We don't get there. And I look at Torts last year with Philly and just how hard he was driving towards the end of the season as they were flunking out of the position they had held for most of the season. And a lot of the narrative around the Flyers were like, well, you know, like they were way better than anybody thought they should be. And like, but Torts was like, fuck that. We're here. And like, this is ours to lose. And like, we should go and push this. We need to recognize that there's an opportunity here and we need to find another level. They weren't able to do it physically. They weren't able to do it. And the goaltending just kind of,
Petered out.
but I tell you, he was rightfully pissed off. And you want to become a winning team, you better be pissed off about it if it doesn't happen, no matter what everybody thought of you at the beginning. And so that's, you want to talk about what would be a successful season with the Canadians. It would be making the playoffs. And if they fall just short and they're in those competitive games, that's fine because they'll have accomplished their goal as long as they're really pissed about it if it doesn't happen for them. Because otherwise, they're not going to keep moving forward.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking, the time and coming on this podcast. I really appreciate it. Is there anything you kind of want to plug for your work at Sportsnet
No, I do enough shameless self-promotion on Twitter. It makes me sick. But no, seriously, it's going to be a fun season. I'm happy you're on board with us, Alex. It's cool that we finally got to do this. I know we've been trying to do it for a long time, and I've been slippery.
That's okay.
But as you will no doubt find out over the coming months, the season goes and it becomes hectic and very busy. And we're gonna have a lot to talk about as we go along. So I'm happy for Sens fans that they have you installed there. And don't worry, they won't hate you too much. In fact, the only thing they'll care about is that you end up being wrong by the end of it. Me too. So
There you go. There
maybe
you go.
that'll be the case. Well, I do want to say, because I know Ottawa fans are watching this, some of them at least. The talent on that roster is there. There's enough of it. The moves they made to insulate the roster were essential. Those veterans that you're talking about, it's about time they started doing stuff like that. Nothing will surprise me. If they end up ahead of the Habs, if they end up in the playoffs, that will not surprise me. I'm not sitting here betting on it right now. I look at them as like, go out and prove it. And I look at Montreal the same way. Go out and prove it. They have the elements, I think, to be a much better team than a lot of people think. I think they'll surprise teams. One thing I'm kind of confident about is that Montreal is going to get off to a very good start, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before. So we'll see where it goes.
I definitely know that Sens fans just want a decent, like a half decent start where they're kind of in the mix by the first 10 or 15 games, because it's been just awful the past couple of years. So hopefully both teams are good. I always think about it with,
Well, the rivalry is good. It's a good rivalry and it's going to build.
I grew up on the Habs versus Sens playoffs in 2013, 2015, right? Like those were the best times to kind of grow up in the city and see all the fans going at it. And just the arenas
There's
filled.
a real hate on between the fans. And like you
There
can
really
kind
is.
of feel it on social media.
There
I think it's
is.
hilarious. I think it's good. I know for sure that the teams don't like each other, that the
No.
players in both rooms do not like each other. And it should make for good hockey between them, especially since we have to watch, four or five games
There
that
you go.
get played, and not to mention a couple in the preseason. So it should be
Yep.
great.
It should be great, and hopefully, just for Sportsnet and just for Canadian fans, hopefully maybe the Leafs, Habs, and Sens all make the playoffs. That'd be pretty great. But
Yeah, give me all the Canadian teams in the playoffs. I'll take that.
Eric Exactly. It might happen. I don't know. I don't know about Calgary, but we'll see. But anyways, Eric, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. Everyone should check out your work at Sportsnet as always, and we'll do this again, and we'll good luck with the season, and hopefully it's a pretty eventful one in Montreal.
Enjoy it, Alex. Look forward to seeing you in Ottawa. Thank you.